This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Macy Gray believes it's time for a new flag to represent the United States of America.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Have you heard about that? Yeah, the flag is too white. Yeah, we'll fill you in. I swear. It's crazy, some of this stuff. Well, I'll fill you in on that story and a lot more coming up a little bit in just a couple minutes here. Right now, I am joined by His Excellency Bishop Paprocki from Springfield, Illinois. If you're just joining us, there's a big development going on in the church right now. The nation's Catholics voted overwhelmingly in favor of drafting a document on communion. And I say, bravo. I think the church needs this. We do. We need some clarity. I think some of these pro-abortion politicians like President Biden and Nancy Pelosi and others need it. Members of the USCCB, they voted to draft a new document on the Eucharist. And they had this, they had 2 days of debate, and they announced the results of the vote. It was 168 bishops voting yes to create a new document on communion and public life. 55 said no. 6 abstained. And a majority voting in the affirmative. So the bishops are now going to go ahead and move forward on this. It should be, there should be another discussion and debate at their annual meeting in November. So we'll see more coming that way. And, the bishops had plenty of time to espouse their positions and defend why they thought it was a good idea or not. The statement's going to really address all Catholics. It's not a weapon with crosshairs pointed at just particular politicians. But, Bishop Donald Hying of Madison, a great bishop, I was reading, he speaks to a lot of his parishioners, and they're very confused by these politicians who bill themselves as Catholics, and then they get away with running so far astray from the teachings of the Catholic Church when it comes to life. For example, the president, we know what he's done with the Hyde Amendment, what he's done to advance the Equality Act, what he's done for marrying, what he's done in marriage. He presided over a so-called gay wedding. Right now the president is one of the most radical pro-abortion agendas in history, and that's confusing to a lot of Catholics. So Bishop Hying says, look, people need direction. I've invited Bishop Paprocki, a great bishop who's willing to take your calls and speak very clearly on this issue. He's part of the meeting. He's here with us today. And before we jump into the calls, Your Excellency, let me just entertain myself with one more. You talk about a Eucharistic revival. I think that is of paramount importance, and I think the church, we'll see, instead of seeing these people exit the church, I think we're going to see churches fill. I think it's brilliant. I think it's important. But at the same time, we see very long communion lines and very short confession lines. And, there might be the need for a confession revival as well. The two almost go hand in hand. Any thoughts on these two sacraments? Are we just focusing on the Eucharist, of course? But what do you think about, once again, breathing life back into that powerful sacrament of mercy?
Well, I think that's a great point. These sacraments are related to each other in terms of to be properly disposed to Holy Communion, to receive Holy Communion. If you're conscious of any grave sin, you have to go to confession first. That's Canon 916. You have to be absolved of your sins. There was a time when people understood that very clearly, and there was a time in the church's history where people would go to communion maybe only 2 or 3 times a year. Now, they would go to Mass every Sunday. They knew they had an obligation to go to Mass on Sunday, but they wouldn't necessarily go to communion. Now we see the pendulum that kind of swung the other way, where people, whenever they go to Mass, they receive Holy Communion without much reflection on whether or not they need to confess any sins. And so I think you're absolutely right that to have an awareness that we need to confess our sins, serious sins, before we go to Holy Communion.
All right, I know you got to run in a couple minutes. Let's grab a couple quick calls. Carol's been waiting in Des Moines, Iowa to join the conversation. She's got a question for you. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I was just calling because I think that more of us, we need to be hearing this in Mass every Sunday. If you're just a Catholic that goes to Mass every Sunday, you're not hearing this from the pastors. I never heard a thing about the political issues or anything like that was going on. Abortion, it's not taught. Unless you're a Catholic that avails yourself outside of the Mass on Sunday, you're not going to hear this. And that's all. I don't know. I mean, I've accessed since COVID, especially YouTube teaching, things like that, that kind of supplement the faith, because we're just not hearing it every Sunday, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I think it's a legitimate point. And Your Excellency, I know that the homily at Mass is really used for reflection on the Gospels and the Scripture there and the Liturgy of the Word. However, a lot of people do say this. What a great platform to speak to people. I mean, is there a place in the Mass or the homily or after Mass, before the Mass, way people can learn or hear more about these critical issues of the faith?
Sure. I mean, I know priests that do that. They include that in their homily. So the homily is part of the Mass, and that the homily should lead then to the reception of the Eucharist later in the Mass. And so it's very appropriate for the priest to talk about being properly disposed to receive Holy Communion. And I think that we need to be reminded of these things from time to time. So this document that we're going to be working on, I don't think it's going to say anything new in particular. And we've got documents from the USCCB in 2004 and 2006 on Holy Communion. We've got papal encyclicals on the Eucharist. But I think it's a question of, you know, people tend to forget, or they just, it goes in the back of their mind, you know, in the back burner or something. So I think it's just to bring some of these issues to the forefront, and particularly as they relate to particular circumstances that we're facing in our time today, so that I think when the bishops say something on this, I'm sure there'll be priests that will follow up once they get direction from the bishops. They'll know, and they'll get the cue as to what to say.
Well, Your Excellency, thank you for your time. I know you got to run. I'm grateful for it. We have a board full of telephone calls. A lot of people want to get in, so maybe you and I can revisit this again at some point in the future. But appreciate you being with us. Before I let you go, Running for a Higher Purpose, your latest book, how can people get it?
You can get that from AveMariaPress.com, or you can get it from my personal website, which is www.holygoly.net.
I love that. What a great website. I love it. Holygoly.net.
Thanks.
Perfect. Hey, how cool. Your Excellency, thank you. Thanks for what you do. We'll talk soon.
You're welcome. God bless you and all your listeners.
Bless you. That's Bishop Thomas Brepocky, the Bishop of Springfield, Illinois. Say a prayer for him. I'm always grateful for him. I always reach out to him. He always says yes. And look, these are hard questions. This is a hot issue, the tough issue. And not every bishop wants to take live fire, if you will. I'm grateful for your calls. I will revisit this, but, you know, I often say here, time is the enemy. There is another issue I do want to bring before you. I think it's important for us to talk about, and that's our flag. And just to give you a little background on our, you know, here in the country, the United States has had its current flag in place since 1960 when Hawaii was added as a state, right? And then the practice has been that every time a state is added to the country, then a star gets added, you know, to the blue field in that upper left corner of the flag. Of course, you got 13 stripes, right? They're meant to represent, do you know what they represent, the first 13 stripes? 13 original colonies. So that's been the basic design of the flag since Betsy Ross is said to have designed it back in the mid-18th century. But you wouldn't know it. There are some who think that the flag is racist. They think the flag is racist. Singer Macy Gray, and I like some of her music. She wrote an op-ed in Market Watch on Friday in which she called the new flag. Here, if you're not familiar with it, yeah, Jake, bring that up a little bit. Let them because soon.
She's got a unique voice, you know?
It's a good song. I mean, she has a great voice, very unique voice. So, you know, when I see people with big followings like Macy Gray come out and say that the flag is racist, I'm like, come on. You know, use your platform for good, not for division. I know she thinks she is, but here, I'll share what you said. Here's her reasoning. You might agree with her. I don't know. She says this: the Confederate battle flag, which was crafted as a symbol of opposition to the abolishment of slavery, is just recently retired. We don't see it much anymore. However, on the 6th, when the stormers rained on the nation's most precious hut, waving Old Glory, the memo was received. The American flag is its replacement. I don't think so. You think the American flag is a replacement for the Confederate flag? I don't think so. It's a leap in logic, if you ask me. The flag is you know, waived at all kinds of events, good and bad. And Gray's idea to replace the flag is to make the white stripes. She wants to change them. They're too white. She wants to go off-white and make the stars various skin tone colors. She also wants to add two more stars for Puerto Rico and for Washington, D.C., neither of which are states. And, of course, the problem with her thinking is that the flag, you know, either 34 or 35 stars was the banner used by the Union Army in fighting against Confederates. And the first Medal of Honor was given to a black American, right? He was Sergeant William Kearney, who, during the Union charge at Fort Wagner, saw the color guard get shot and stumble. And then he grabbed the flag, and he would not let it touch the ground as he led that charge up the hill to the fort, even though he himself had been shot several times. Let's talk about it. I'm joined today by James Herson, New York Times bestselling author, great commentator, great contributor to the show, author of the Left Coast Report. You can see that at Newsmax.com. And, of course, the author of a number of New York Times bestsellers. You can check them out, Tales from the Left Coast, Hollywood Nation, amongst others. And he's here today. If you want any of his books, it's James Herson. That's H-I-R-S-E-N.com. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter at the Jim Jams, because Jim is a musician as well. The Jim Jams. Cool Twitter handle there. Jim, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. This is right up my alley, Drew, because Macy Gray is a rhythm and blues musician, and so am I.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know that. My sure. background, for several years, I toured with the Temptations. I've worked with people. I haven't worked with Macy Gray, but I worked with Natalie Cole. I work with a lot of great musicians. And some of the musicians know what they're talking about. Macy Gray does not, because what she said shows a profound misunderstanding of history and what the American flag means, not only to us in this country, but all over the world. You know, you think just recently we saw these thousands of courageous protesters in Hong Kong who were fighting a very difficult battle, a losing battle, to try to keep Hong Kong independent, to keep it free. And what did they wave there in Hong Kong, thousands of miles away from America? They were waving the American flag. They were waving the same American flag that Francis Scott Key wrote about. He was inspired after an incredible battle. Miraculously, it seemed like everything was destroyed except this tattered flag, which inspired him to write the lyrics to our national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner. Yeah. I mean, the idea of messing with the flag is messing with something that has acquired a secondary meaning. And when I say that, that's a legal concept from trademark law. You know, things like you'd say, well, an apple is a piece of fruit, but it no longer is when we're talking about computers and phones and technology. It has taken on a secondary meaning. That symbol with the bite out of it has become the symbol for one of the biggest companies in the world. Similarly, the flag has a secondary meaning, a spiritual meaning, I would say. Yeah. And what it means is freedom. It means the things that not only our founders fought for, but every single person who's put on a uniform and risked their lives, it has a greater meaning. It's really similar to almost the sacred objects. You know, if we take a crucifix can be a wonderful work of art. It can be a sculpture. But to us, crucifix takes on a secondary spiritual meaning. It is the meaning of the greatest sacrifice ever in the history of man that frees us from sin and death. Yeah. It is not, these kinds of sacred objects are not to be tampered with and insulted, because what's happening there, it is more than just a piece of cloth is being insulted. American values, the virtues that are behind that beautiful symbol. And ironically, Drew, this is the symbol that was waved by people, hundreds and thousands of people who gave their lives to end slavery. They were waving American flags. I mean, it's just, it's
true.
Something that I have lots of musician friends of all colors and stripes, and the vast majority of them understand the profound meaning that transcends the problems that we may have had in our history. It's what it means today all over the world.
You know, you bring up this point. I mean, Macy Gray is not alone. I mean, I think there was some other Democratic politician or somebody who was making the same connection about the Capitol on January 6th. And the fact that people rioted at the Capitol and yet there were American flags there, I think it's a leap in logic to equate that with a symbol of oppression, because the flag is really a symbol of freedom around the world, as you so eloquently pointed out, in Hong Kong and a lot of other places as well. But there are people who look at the flag as such now. They've done away with the Confederate flag. To change the American flag, to me, is such a huge leap, because the color of the flags, they're supposed to represent specific things. White represents purity. You know, Gray says the U.S. isn't pure, right? I mean, she wants to change the color of the stripes and put skin colors in the stars. Maybe I'm giving too much airtime to Macy Gray on something like this, but she's not alone. It's the reason I wanted to deal with this, Jim, because I have other politicians saying the same thing. I mean, our flag seems to have in recent years come under a lot of attack.
Oh, it has, and there are groups, and we've seen these groups out committing violent acts and burning flags and desecrating flags and tearing down statues. I mean, it's the same type of thinking. It's the idea that somehow the past and the heritage must be totally destroyed, all of the tradition, because it's not perfect. And of course, you know, we realize, those of us that are Catholic and Christian understand that we expect imperfection in this world, that there is not going to be perfection. And the exceptionality of America is that it has grown beyond the imperfections. And part of the reason that happened, why did slavery end in America? When America was born, the entire world was a slavery world. How is it possible that the abolitionists miraculously got rid of slavery, and that civil rights leaders who marched waving American flags, those civil rights leaders got away from segregation and Jim Crow? Why did that happen? That happened because this country was founded on Judeo-Christian principles, founded on principles that are immutable and true, and work, and have worked better than any country on earth. And so what we have to do is reject this notion that our heritage and history has to be torn down and forgotten. What we have to do is build on the good parts, the virtuous parts of our history, and grow into the country we're meant to be. And that I really believe that these groups have been duped by people that don't believe that. They want to socially engineer a utopia on earth. And that's what we've seen, you know, with socialism, and we've seen it with communist regimes, and it doesn't work. And that's why in our heritage, we pray against it. And so we have to build on the positives, that these unique and exceptional positives that are very providential in our founding principles. And I guess that's, you know, we don't teach civics. Our schools have been infiltrated, and so many of our institutions have, and our media has. And I think Macy Gray, that's her stage name, by the way. I think her real name is Natalie.
Yeah.
I think Natalie just needs to open up her mind and to take another look at the at the piece of cloth that she wants to alter and change, because it is inclusive. Yeah. It is not racist.
Could not agree with you more. Let's go to Jim in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. We'll take a few calls. I only have my guest today for a few minutes. So if you want to join James Hurston, the number's 888-914-9149. Jim in Eau Claire, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, Drew, can you hear me? This is Tim from Eau Claire.
Tim, I'm sorry. They wrote down Jim. Yeah, it's great to have you. We can hear you perfectly.
Well, I posted maybe about a year ago or so, or maybe 6 months ago. I posted a true story about Francis Scott Key and the battle that was taking place and how he drew up the Star-Spangled Banner, and Facebook blocked it because they said this article contains fake news.
Wow.
Our fact checkers have determined that there's fake news in this article. And I tried to explain to them, and I just copied the whole story, right as it happened. And a few days later, it reappeared. So I just wanted to mention that.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate you being there. James, your thought on that? Again, we've seen a lot of censorship coming out of big tech.
The fact-checking is not fact-checking at all. And what the good news is that story came back. And it's, the true story is similar to what I said. I didn't fill in all the detail. There was a historical battle. It's real, and the flag was still there, and it inspired Francis Scott Key, to pen those lyrics. But it's really a shame, and it really is un-American what's happening with our social media controlled by Silicon Valley companies that have staffed at their companies with biased and some cases evil fact checkers, so-called. And they're using that to suppress facts. It's an irony. I mean, when people, and I hear this all the time, people post data and then all of a sudden it's either suppressed or erased because it isn't the right data. It doesn't fit the predominant narrative. And so I think that's what Tim, and by the way, Eau Claire, beautiful place. And that's what Tim is talking about. Yeah.
Well, look, James, I want to thank you. I've got less than a minute here. My apologies to everyone on hold. We'll continue to follow the story. People want to follow you. I guess the best way is just at your Twitter handle, @TheJimJams.
Yes, that would be great. And I'm on Facebook, and I also have jameshurston.com, my own website.
All right, check them all out. Follow him on Twitter. Check out the website. Pick up his books. Always good to talk to you. Keep up and check out his music, too. We'll have to talk about that again. Hey, James, thanks. It is almost bottom of the hour. I'll be back. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
But I would argue that critical race theory is itself racist, because it argues that white people have a property interest in their whiteness, and that the only way you can have a just society is if white people divest themselves of their whiteness. And everything is seen through the lens of race, with whites always being the oppressors and minorities being the victims. And it leads to a lot of bullying.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You know, they're using racism to conquer racism. I mean, we fought, as we said, we fought to get white pigs away from the trough, not to replace them with black pigs. We fought to get pigs away from the trough. And what they are doing is so insulting and demeaning to black America. The assumption is that unless and until white people change and reform, there's little we can do, as if we have no agency, that we have no understanding.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Yeah, that was Bob Woodson you just heard. Prior to that, Dr. Carl Swain. And I appreciate the perspective of both of them. I saw an article, and I thought of a regular contributor to this program, Dr. Paul Kengor, who you've heard here for years. He's written about, Karl Marx and the devil and dupes, and he's written a number of different books. And I was looking at this whole issue of critical race theory, right, how it's infiltrating our schools. And there was a great piece on the Marxist roots of this, and I thought I'd just bring it to your attention. There's a school district in Beaverton, Oregon. It's a suburb of Portland, if you're not familiar with the area, and they have apparently declared that, and I want to quote this, that it, quote, perpetuates institutional racism and embodies a white supremacist culture. Now, that's what they said of themselves, right? They're saying that about themselves. No one else is saying that. They're saying that. And this comes after the district endorsed a black-only graduation ceremony that was held in May. Is that fair? Is that discriminatory? If you're white or if you're any other race, you can't come. We're having a black-only graduation ceremony. This whole thing of tolerance. Everybody wants us to tolerate their worldview, but they're very intolerant of someone else's, right? And this whole thing when it comes to, you know, segregation and discrimination, you could have a black-only graduation ceremony. So the Daily Wire reported that the school board was planning a vote tonight, right? They're going to vote on a document called the Anti-Racist Vision Statement, and it's put forth by the Equitable Policies Task Force. So far, there's been one dissenting voice on the board, and he put his finger exactly on what's going on when he said this. And I'll quote him directly. He says this, quote, "Other radical and radicalized practices of DEI training have been known to use radical gender segregation as a training method along with racial essentialism, the primacy of power dynamics, a victim and oppressor privilege narrative, and structural racism determinism. I know it's a mouthful. But those issues of power dynamics, a victim and oppressor narrative, structural determinism, they're elements that come, you know where from? You might not be aware of this. They come from none other than Marxism. Karl Marx, he pushed the idea that might makes right. I don't believe that. That there are only victims and oppressors. I don't believe that. And that you're determined by either a victim or oppressor, depending on the status you were born into. Senator Marco Rubio, who I really like, he confronted this. He addressed it at a conference over the weekend. And Senator Rubio said this. He says, Marxism is not dead. Marxism is not an economic theory, he says. He says, what's happened is that Marxists, they realize what the track record of Marxism is around the world, so they don't want to call themselves Marxists anymore, right? They found new titles, things that sound benign. You almost feel guilty being against them. Like social justice. I've said this all the time. I'm on the air all the time talking about the power of these antiseptic, you know, very socially, you know, just words. Who's against social justice, right? Who could be against that? He goes on to say, but that's the terminology they come up with, equity. Who could be against equity, he says. This is where we are today, and I'm just here to help you parse through this, to be able to see through the fog, the smoke, to really understand what's behind these whitewashed walls, if you will, really the corruption, the deviancy, the misguided ideology that somehow is driving all this. And nobody better than the author of the book, The Devil and Karl Marx. It is a great read. Everybody I know who's read it loves it. My board operator or my call screener, Patrick Alog, is giving me two thumbs up and a head nod right now. He loves the book. I'm joined by the author of that book, Dr. Paul Kengor, professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. Professor, always a delight to have you here. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your writing.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. You know, once again, another of these wonderfully uplifting topics, eh?
I know. I grapple with that every morning with my show team. I'm like, oh, I need to light a candle. Why am I talking about this? But, you know, it's infiltrating the culture. It's infiltrating the classroom and the household. And people don't know. I mean, how can you be against equity or social justice for these things that sound so clean and moral, right? It's crazy. But that's what's happening, yeah. Trying to help people better understand.
Yeah, and well, in Catholic schools, too. It's happening in a lot of Catholic schools as well. And I heard that initial clip early on from Bob Woodson and Carol Swain, and they're both with the group 1776 Unites. I've known Bob Woodson going back, at least 15 years. And, you know, he, like me, has followed this toxic stuff, critical race theory, for a long time. And it's extremely divisive. And it is the complete opposite of what Martin Luther King Jr. preached, which was to judge people by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. And, you know, this whole how to be an anti-racist, that's based on Ibram Kendi's book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. And he's the one who referred to people like, well, myself and Amy Coney Barrett, who have, you know, adopted black children as white colonizers. So, you know, that's how you be an anti-racist, Drew. Wow. See, you take somebody who's adopted, a child who's, you know, black, and you refer to them as a white colonizer. But the thing that they do, and this is how it relates to Marx, and critical race theory comes from critical theory, which comes from the Frankfurt School, 1920s and 1930s. I could say a lot more about that. But generally speaking, just as Marx filtered everything, and I mean everything, through the lens of class and economics, these critical race theorists filter absolutely everything through the lens of race, everything, even stuff that shouldn't be there. And so, you know, everything is about race. And wow. It even makes me suspicious of something like the June 19th holiday, which, right, you know, right, is something that, you know, I can't object to. And it's a great thing. And I mean, you know, that's something, you know, that's definitely a day to celebrate. No question about it. But you immediately become suspicious because you think, well, you know, these are the same guys that are these are the same guys who are pushing X, Y, and Z, right? You know, that's the people who are trying to racialize everything to the point of where, yeah, I mean, could you imagine having separate graduation ceremonies for the black students, the white students? What is this, Arkansas, the 40s? Right? But the people who are pushing it are the progressives in the name of racial harmony and tolerance. So it's the one really Marxist thing about it is it divides and it puts everybody. And you can see this in a major proponent of critical race theory, Patrice Cullors, the founder of Black Lives Matter.
Right.
If you read her book, her memoir, which I have, I'll tell you, Drew, everybody in that book, no one is an individual. Everybody is a category.
Wow.
Part of a group. You are not an individual made in the image of God, and she's not a Christian. You are either white or black or by POC, by person of color, you are, you know, put into gender or sexual category. Everybody is identified by their group, and it's really divisive, and it's not Christian. It's also not Christian. It's certainly not Catholic.
Yeah, that's for sure. My guest today, Dr. Paul Kangor. If you want to join us, maybe you are seeing this in the schools in which you teach, or you're exposed to it in the places you work. If you want to sound off, or you have a question, you might agree or disagree. Feel free to dial in now at 888-914-9149. You know, you're the expert on Karl Marx. You just wrote your book on him, The Devil and Karl Marx. But correct me if I'm wrong on this, but my understanding is that Marx didn't really deal with race issues. So what does race have to do with Marxism? I mean, fill me in on that and maybe illuminate me if you could.
Well, if anything, Marx was a racist. And that's one of the things that I go over at length in that book that really shocked people. You know, you see Marx's use of the N-word and, you know, basing his whole worldview in a very racist evolutionary racism. You know, rejected the idea that people were created by God, you know, put people according to different groups and colors on different rings of the evolutionary scale. You could find the N-word all through his writings. The things that he said about his poor son-in-law, who was partly Cuban, so in Marx's view, that made him partly black. And so he and Engels made fun of him. They called him the gorilla or negrilla.
Gosh, how horrible.
Yeah, and they tried to estimate how much, quote-unquote, Negro blood he had in him. You know, 1/8, Marx estimated. That poor guy, his name was Paul Lafargue, he ended up killing himself in a suicide pact with Marx's daughter.
Wow.
In fact, two of Marx's daughters killed themselves in suicide pacts with their husbands. So yeah, this was this man had very ugly views. But the kind of commonality again with Marxism. So Marxism generally is forever about finding the sort of chosen or anointed victim group that will serve as the sort of ultimate redeemer group. And so with Marx, it was the proletariat, right? The proletariat, the working class. So this redeemer group, this victim group, you had to make it aware of its victimization, and then that group would usher in the new world, right? The fundamental transformation. When that failed, when that sort of proletarian, class-based, economic, Marxist, classical Marxist revolution failed, all these other types of Marxist groups started coming up with their own search for different groups. And it was the Frankfurt School that sexualized Marxism. They, you know, they combine Marx and Freud, of all things, if you can imagine that. Wilhelm Reich, a Marxist, a Freudian Marxist, literally wrote the book The Sexual Revolution. Antonio Gramsci, who was Italian, he was what you'd call a cultural Marxist, a Marxist who applied Marxism to culture. There are people in the academy today, Judith Butler, she's a gender Marxist, she's a sexual Marxist. So there's all these different critical theory groups, and Patrice Cullors said, the founder of Black Lives Matter, she said, we spent a whole year reading Marx, Lenin, Alicia and I, Alicia's the co-founder, Alicia Garza, she's the co-founder of Black Lives Matter. She said, we are trained Marxists. We are super versed in ideological theories. We are super versed in critical theories. So what they did, like a number of other different groups, is they applied Marxism to race. And so that's where they are today. And it's dividing the country. It's ripping it apart. And people who don't think that they're even racist or really aren't racist are being told that they are, and they just don't know it. Right? Wow. They need to be educated to learn that. So it's a very revolutionary philosophy and ideology.
Yeah, it's amazing how pervasive it's becoming today, too. You know, everywhere you turn. What is it about this particular ideology that people are so accepting of? I mean, if you know your history, you know the dangers of this. But what do you think is attributing to its widespread acceptance?
Well, they don't know the history of it. And a group like Black Lives Matter, I mean, that's one of those brilliant sloganeering things, right? I mean, you know, who could possibly say that black lives don't matter? No one would say that, right? No one would say that. So you come up with a name like that, and with an organization, the two of the three founders, again, Alicia Garza and Patrice Cullors, are proud and open trained Marxists. And so they're able to push those ideas through a group that, you know, that shouldn't be about Marxism at all. But you go to the website and you see phrases like, you know, we favor the abolition of the Western prescribed nuclear family structure. And people said, well, what does that have to do with George Floyd, right? What does that have to do with police reform? Well, in the Communist Manifesto, it says, quote, abolition of the family, exclamation mark. Even the most radical flare up at this infamous proposal of a communist, unquote. You know, Marxists talked about abolition. They talked about family. They talked about abolition of all religion, all morality, property, everything else. And I wrote a piece on this for American Spectator last week. It's posted up there right now. It's called BLM founder Patrice Cullors, Marxist Abolitionist. She has a new video out where she calls herself an abolitionist. And she's not talking there, Drew, about abolitionists in terms of slavery. I mean, that has absolutely nothing to do with the whatever. She says, what is an abolitionist? And she said, when I talk about abolition, I mean getting rid of, and this is a direct quote, I mean getting rid of police, prisons and jails, incarceration, courts, and surveillance. And she says, I'm not talking about just defunding. I'm talking about abolition. So, and Marx was an abolitionist, right? He wanted to abolish not slavery. Right. Marx wanted to abolish property, family, and as he put it, Marxism favors the abolition of all that exists, unquote. Very, very revolutionary, very destructive. And the Catholic Church recognized this, which is why the Church opposed it so strongly.
Yeah, my guest today, Dr. Paul Kangor. Paul, I got to take a short break, so stay with me. Come back. Brian and Appleton, you're on deck. We'll take your calls. We're taking a look at the Marxist roots of critical race theory. What's behind it? And you can join the conversation right after this.
Connect with Drew. Relevant Radio.
At 888-914-9149.
The Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Your news, your issues, your opinions. Now, the Drew Mariani Show is here for you at 888-914-9149. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, hey, thanks for joining us. If you are just tuning in, I'm speaking with the author of The Devil and Karl Marx, Dr. Paul Kengor. He also just wrote an article. We put it up on our Facebook page and our Twitter. You'll find it there if you go to at Drew Mariani Show. It's called BLM Founder, Black Lives Founder, Patrice Cullors, Marxist Abolitionist. And you'll find that at the American Spectator if you want to go there directly. It's written by Dr. Paul Kengor. And we're talking today, if you're just getting plugged into the Marxist origins, the underpinning of critical race theory. And this is a topic that seems to be coming up over and over again. We've been dealing with this issue for quite a while now. And look, critical race theory is something that might be being taught in your kids' schools, and we're seeing it infiltrate the lives of American culture. I mean, the core of the critical race theory is pretty broad. It's a set of ideas about really a systematic bias and racism in American history. That's the case it makes. And they argue that the legacy of white supremacy, you know, it remains embedded in society through laws and institutions. Even Macy Gray, I just talked about her in the last segment, thinks that the American flag is too white. She wants to change the color of the stripes and the stars. And, you know, it's unfortunate. And, you know, the opponents argue because the theory focuses on race, the approach itself is racist. So I'm joined by somebody who knows this intimately, and it's Dr. Paul Kengor. Your article is up, Doc. We got it at Twitter right now. And let's jump in. We'll grab a few calls, get back into the conversation. Brian's in Appleton, Wisconsin. Brian, you're on the air. Dr. Kengor, welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I love your show, and yes, I really appreciate Dr. Paul Kengor. It's an honor to be on while he's a guest.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. I'd like to just kind of walk through as quickly as I can the three Reconstruction Amendments, and I know that none of this is news to Dr. Kengor, but I'll just kind of walk through it as quickly as I can to sort of make my point. So the three Reconstruction Amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th, were first to abolish slavery, and then secondly to allow equal protections under the law for citizenship as Negro citizens, and then finally the 15th was the right to vote. And the 14th Amendment was actually passed by Congress in 1864 with 100% Republican votes and zero Democrat votes. The Democrats were strongly opposed to the abolition of slavery, and so the Democrats had enough votes to prevent that from passing after the Senate passed it. So then the Republicans made another shot at it in 1865, and with all 84 of the Republicans supporting it, challenged by 50 Democrats voting against it, there were enough votes from minority parties to help the 14th Amendment, the 13th Amendment, to finally pass with Democrats voting against it and no Democrat votes in support of it. Well, then the 14th Amendment was needed in order to give the newly freed slaves citizenship, because they were freed but they didn't have citizenship rights. So the 14th Amendment was then voted on, and it was all Republicans once again that voted for the 14th Amendment. There were 127 votes in the House that were all Republicans, and there were 32 Republican votes in the Senate that passed it. All the Democrats either voted to oppose it or to abstain. So the 14th Amendment was only by the effort of the Republicans was it passed. The 15th Amendment then for voting rights, this would be the most contentious because now it would give the slaves the right to vote, was passed in the House of Representatives by 141 Republican votes and two minority party votes. All Democrat members either opposed it or abstained. And in the Senate, again, all Republican votes passed it, and all Democrats voted either to oppose it. They all voted to oppose it. So now that the black slaves were given the right to vote, the Democrat Party was in a desperate position. So now they had votes, they had slaves which were previously property, who would now have the freedom to vote for the political party who had just freed them. So this was pretty concerning, because now the slave owners could be outvoted by their former property slaves.
Wow.
And so the Democrat Party did every imaginable type of intimidation and legislation and everything they could do to prevent these black citizens from casting Republican votes. And I think we've all seen movies of the houses being burned down,
right.
And the crosses burning and everything that could be done to prevent these new voters from voting Republican in opposition to their slave owners.
Right.
You've done an amazing job. That is great stuff. Yeah, Juneteenth is a Republican holiday. Right. I mean, it's an amazing thing. And, you know, one of the things I was asked on a radio show a couple of days ago, my feelings about the new holiday, would I be celebrating it? And I said, you know, one of the things that I said all the positive things, and I said one of the things that bothers me is how one of the only sins that we can condemn in America is racism, right? Why can't we all come together around the unborn, right? Defending the unborn. I'd love to see a national holiday for the right to life, the sanctity and dignity of human life. And what's interesting, Brian, is that, and Drew, if we proposed a national holiday for right to life, the vote would probably be exactly what Brian just said, you know, going back to the 1860s with the Reconstruction Amendments. You'd have 100% of Republicans in support of it, and probably no Democrats to, I don't know, maybe 3, 4, 5 Democrats at the most in the House.
Wow.
I think Dan Lipinski was probably the final pro-life Democrat that was left in the House. So it really bothers me that we can't condemn that, you know, we can't come together with on an issue like that for the country. But great job there on the data. That's exactly right. The Republican Party was the party that was anti-slavery, that ended slavery.
Yeah.
Lincoln was you know, the founder of the Republican Party, and the Democrats were completely against it. No question about
so
it.
So true.
None.
Such a great piece of history. Hey, Brian, thank you. Good to hear from you. Appreciate you making the call. Let me sneak Francis in. He's in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, doctor. Or she, I should say. Hi, Francis. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I have a grandson who's in college. He's a junior. He's studying to be a teacher. And he just mentioned the other day about critical race theory. And he just mentioned it briefly, but I could tell he's very strongly in favor of it. And I know briefly, very briefly about it from the Catholic viewpoint. I've read some things about it, but I don't know enough to actually have a good discussion with him. So I need some pointers. I'm not a debater. I'm not a, you know, very eloquent speaker, but I would like to discuss with him and hear his ideas and present him with the correct information.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I've been increasingly asked that, right? And in fact, different books I've done, like The Politically Incorrect Guide to Communism, I actually do not have a section on critical race theory because I've avoided this stuff because it's so toxic, it's so divisive, and it angers me, it sickens me, it's something that I've avoided like the plague, and now unfortunately it's something that we're going to have to deal with. And so there are a lot of articles out there. I mean, this might be a good approach. Okay, there's a website called 1776 Unites, and it's run by Bob Woodson and Carol Swain, who was put the clips were played from them at the very beginning of this show by Drew and Patrick. So they have all kinds of stuff there, and that entire group almost is African American Christian. They're really good on this. In addition to that, you might even just go online. It's as easy as going to Google or some search engine, and checking for some videos on critical race theory, because there are some really, really good 2 to 3 minute videos that have gone viral from, in particular, African-American parents who were really incensed, really angry about this, who really get it, who really understand it. So it shouldn't take much Googling and digging around to probably find some pretty good, helpful things. Now, the key will be getting through to your son and convincing him to look at it and read it. And unfortunately, our educational system is so brainwashed, so many young people, that they're not even open to looking at a contrary viewpoint on the subject.
Yeah. Well, Doctor, thank you. Francis, thank you for your call, too. I've got less than a minute. I just want to make sure people can connect to you. The American Spectator, your piece is there. It's also on our Twitter page. And, of course, they can get your book, The Devil and Karl Marx. I'm assuming that's available at all major bookstores. And just give you the final thoughts. I have less than a minute for you.
Yeah, so I mean, we need to continue to educate ourselves about these things because our schools have absolutely failed to teach this, and it's become a very divisive subject. I'll go back to what I said at the beginning, Martin Luther King Jr. We need to judge people by the content of their character, not the color of their
Amen
skin.
Amen to that. Doctor, thank you. Thanks for your eloquence, for time. It's always good to talk to you. That's Dr. Paul Kangor. I'm out of time for the day. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, remember, God loves you. And so do I. Have a good day.